And welcome back. It's the September 7th edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Ken Osborne. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer your questions in the Sioux Falls studio here. Matt Guru, Joel Brovelite. Hi, Joel.
Hey, how are you doing?
I am wonderful. How are things since we last talked?
I think I've missed two in a row. I don't think I've missed two in a row for 15 years.
Yeah, it's been a long journey, hasn't it?
Yes.
Long tech journey.
What's
new in Apple news?
I think everybody's kind of waiting for the next phone announcement, which I think we're probably going to see here pretty soon. I'm not sure exactly when they have an event scheduled. I'm looking into that right now, but I think that's kind of what we're waiting on for whatever their refresh of the new line, particularly iPhones. For the holiday season, they like to have everything kind of set by certainly mid-November. But
oh yeah, we're getting to be that time of year, aren't we?
I know. I'm already seeing Halloween decorations in all the stores, so that means Christmas is coming like in a month or so.
So yeah, layaways and and more tech deals and things. On the phone, Jeff Litterick joins us from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
What's new in your world?
Well, we're finally getting some kind of a fall weather, so we've been enjoying that quite a bit. So, should be a good weekend.
Yeah. Are you planning on taking any advantage of the free Call of Duty World War II weekend and from Steam?
No, actually not this weekend because it actually is nice, and I got to get some stuff done before winter. So.
Oh yeah. Got to get that outside work in. So, I just was going to mention that today. There was a couple of little Steam tidbits that filtered through the news feed this week. They're dealing with trolls in a new, interesting way or something. I don't know. Or they're trying to. And then this free weekend, which I thought would be up your alley.
But actually, it's kind of funny because Call of Duty World War II is the first Call of Duty I haven't bought in. God, has it been 15, 20 years?
Probably.
Because I remember the Call of Duty originally was all about World War II. The very first few years Call of Duty came out, it was actually always set in World War II. So, and I remember all those games and playing through and having fun. So this is the only year I really skipped Call of Duty. So,
it's been a long time. I noticed that Chrome hit 10 on Monday, 10 years
with a new version too. That kind of overhauled the look and stuff. So,
yeah, major redesign, and I'm hearing things about some blurry fonts that I'll have to kind of check into. What's odd is I started seeing Windows notices pop up about, do you want us to try to fix your blurry fonts? And I'm like, I hadn't heard that before, Jeff. Was that a new feature for Windows trying to do some diagnostics for me? Or?
Well, I've seen that ever since Windows 7, at least on laptops, not so much on desktops, because Windows 7 and above lets you run a little you know how you go into the eye doctor and say, does it look, if you wore glasses, does it look better or does this one? Kind of flip-flop of different things.
A or
to
B.
See how well it looks for you. Windows will do the same thing for your fonts. It runs through a little script, and it'll give you comparisons of, does this look better or that look better? And then you pick which ones, and over a set of series, it will actually tune the clear type fonts on your laptop. And I've mainly seen this on laptops, to be sharper, clearer, and in terms of size for your eyes. So there's actually, if you go into your personalization and dig down, there's a little under the font stuff where you can run this, and it will give you different examples, and you pick which one looks best for you.
Sure. Well, that's a handy feature if you find that things aren't as clear as you think they should be on your display.
Yeah, I haven't had any issues with the blurry prompts, and most of what I've heard, I know Google's looking into it, is kind of in their developer panels and stuff, panels that a lot of people don't go into, where most of the blurry stuff was at. And it wasn't the font they're using, because they use the font on other programs and it looks normal. So it is something within Chrome itself. So
sure. Should also note, Firefox came out with a new version. It's supposed to be slimmer and better, and other things as well. So if you're a Firefox user, updates for that are pending if you already haven't done them. I don't know. Are you getting kind of tired of browser news?
I guess I'm not tired because I skip it every time it comes up. So yes and no.
There is some stuff we probably should talk about Chrome. Some major changes coming in this version and next version for those people who actually look at security settings and maybe get a little concerned. Chrome, especially, is trying to kind of overhaul the what we call the URL area of the browser, where it shows you, you know, where you're going, what website you're going to. And they're kind of changing that. They really want HTTPS, which is an encrypted site, to be the only sites you go to. And if a site is not HTTPS enabled, it's now going to start saying it's an insecure site. Not that the site's insecure, but any data you send to it is in clear text. So it's going to make sites look insecure to people who don't know what's really going on. Also, the new Chrome is taking stuff off, like different parts of the domain. Like if you have www, it just kind of erases it and hides it from you. It's still there. You still go to the right site, but Chrome, for whatever reason, is just hiding trivial type of things like that. And then, like I said, and in the next version, you're going to get a big warning that says any HTTP only site you go to is going to be not secure. You're going to get kind of a big warning on that. Those of us that know security realize it's still secure. You just don't want to put any PII data, personal data, to that site unless it's encrypted. But so those are some big changes coming in Chrome, and we'll see how that all works out in the end. They've been planning this for a very long time.
Sure.
And different versions, as we've gone, has been getting more and more strict on HTTPS versus HTTP, what color is shown, if the site's secure or not. But now they're getting ready in this very next version, which will be in about 6 weeks, to basically say any HTTP-only site, you're going to get a big warning on there, and this is a non-secure site. So
everybody loves change.
Put up props and stuff if you try to enter data into text fields and stuff. So just be aware that is coming with Chrome. So
Yeah, everybody just embraces change so well that this is all going to be great. Wow. Well, this is a listener interactive program. If you have a question, we will try to provide that answer. You can text us, 956-SDPB, 956-7372 is our phone number. For that, our regular phone number to give us a call, 800-852-0214. Twitter users, you can send questions to @KenSDPB. Of course, the email address is inthemoment@sdpb.org. You're one of the few, or one of the, I guess, 75% that still tolerate Facebook. It's facebook.com/techradio. There was some interesting, social media news all week. Stuff out of Congress, and then there was some Pew studies that came out with some interesting information. 3/4 of the users of Facebook have changed the way that they interact, or they've changed their settings in the last year. 1/4 of those of Facebook users have uninstalled or deleted or deactivated their accounts. So that's kind of a big segment of folks.
And what's really bad for Facebook is it's very skewed to the younger set. It's kind of funny, but if you're older, you tended to stay on Facebook and are still using Facebook. If you're younger, those are the people that dumped it in droves.
Dumped it and actually went in and fiddled with their privacy settings and made changes. The folks that are possibly 60 and older haven't gone in and done that yet, and that's a little bit troubling. I mean, it's not I don't find it shocking or unusual, but I see that as potentially a problem. The folks that the younger set that have stayed have modified their settings perhaps to something that better fits them. Older folks continue along without maybe checking into those settings like they should, I guess.
Yeah, and it gives me a little bit of hope for the younger generation that they are going to actually value their privacy maybe a little bit more. For a while, it seemed like nobody valued their own privacy for a long time and didn't care what information was out there and stuff. And we're seeing a trend now where people are starting to care about their real privacy and what they want to share and what they want other people to be able to see about themselves.
Well, also, I guess in the news this week, and the gentleman that coined the term net neutrality, Tim Wu, in a new book makes a compelling argument for the government breaking up, antitrust sort of breaking up Google, Facebook, calling them a threat to democracy. And then the book's called The Curse of Bigness. So that's going to be an interesting public debate over the course of, I don't know how long it is, but, you know, kind of Teddy Roosevelt style breaking up big companies. That's going to potentially good things, bad things, I guess, depending on your point of view.
Well, I think there's lots going to have to happen before the government's going to go around breaking up, companies, certainly large tech companies. If that were to even come to pass, we wouldn't see anything in that for 5-10 years, I'd bet. It'll have to go through so much litigation first.
Right, and yeah. It seems like the FCC is kicking it to the FTC as far as making these decisions because there's a Title II reclassification, I guess, coming down the pike that's going to, you know, take it from a telecommunications thing more to the internet services. They're going to reclassify and say, hey, FCC is saying, hey, you know, on one hand they're saying, hey, we need to check into these big problems going on and
yeah, the FCC under Ajit Pai is demurring from regulating the market. They would rather have other agencies do that and would prefer to make other rules.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Well, we'll have to see.
They still want to comment on it, but they don't want to take care of it anymore. So
indeed.
That's going to be. I'm going to follow that. That's going to be very interesting. We found out what it takes to finally get permaban from Twitter this week, and that's
a lot, a lot.
Yeah.
It
well,
takes a lot.
You know, attacking the owner of Twitter on the way out of Congress one day. Boy, that really upset some people. One, the folks that are claiming censorship that I don't think they understand the First Amendment, but
of course
they have those folks. But also the folks that are saying, "Hey, we've been asking for this for the InfoWars Alex Jones ban on Twitter for 6 years."
Well, I mean, I think they can easily claim that it was a successive series of events that caused that, not one infraction at a hearing. I think anybody that thinks that it was simply that is probably ignoring, the hiatus that he had to take. I think it was just even a couple of weeks ago, and all the warning that he had before that. So I don't begrudge them that. I think they followed. They did it about as good as they could. I mean, they were going to get in trouble one way or another, and it seems like they gave him plenty of chances. So.
Yeah, and so the whole storm, the clouds are forming, the whole storm is brewing Capitol Hill-wise, as far as like the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, is going to start getting together with the state's attorney generals and talking about censorship and the blocking of political views and speech.
Oh, boy.
And, yeah, this is going to...
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to hold judgment on that until after November, nobody's going to do anything related to that before November. And after November, there'll be a lot more movement or there'll be a lot different movement. So hard to tell. Right now, it's, I think, more bluster than anything.
All right. Well,
just a way to spend money and fly people places, as far as I can tell.
That, again, it's going to be very interesting, and we'll certainly follow up on this show with the experts. Folks, we do need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Thad Geed. He's here. We're going to talk about what happened in this space last night. But that's after this break.
What kind of agreement are we making? And
figure that out once you have the problem.
I think
you right now you have. Hang on, you have fictitious problems that you've dreamed up.
Yeah.
Okay. I think you need to get beyond that. Of like have actual clients and real problems. Like that, treat it like a lemonade stand, like little kids do. Little kids are really great about lemonade stand, and they'll just go out and make terrible lemonade, and people aren't buying it. So then they add more sugar, and they change the price, and people like kids will iterate and fail fast, and they'll be on their 14th business model in 2 hours. And I think that you, it would be good for you, and good, it's good for all of us. We all have to do this.
Yeah, that was a clip from last night's Chalk Talk. It was presented by Alluvio, Zeal, and SDPB. The voices we heard were Rhiannon. She was a woman that had an idea and needed some help. And Clinton Brown, I believe.
Yep.
Clint and provided some, what I shall say, I'll call it liquid encouragement because of the lemonade comment. But that was great.
Yeah. Did you have fun?
I had fun, and I made this comment to. I made a comment after the show to William. I said, my brain hurts. I exercised brain muscles that I probably hadn't exercised in a very long time, yeah. Keeping up with everybody in the room. Mm-hmm. So diverse. I was amazed at the diversity of ideas and people and help and backgrounds, from... basically college professors to, folks that were a little Sheldon Cooper-like and everything in between. I loved.
It was a good small mix of it. Well, we had probably 16 or 18 actual individuals in ourselves, so it was a good kind of first group of it. But yeah, I think people were super rewarded from what they said by either if they won, presented their idea out to the group to have a little group brainstorm, group think, mm-hmm. kind of divulge and happen. But then also people that didn't present their idea, they're like, this allowed me to like open a new brain space and have like just an open mindset to different kind of creative thought about my own stuff, even if I was constructing on theirs or helping theirs. But it also just allowed me to lift some fog in my own ideas or projects.
Well, we got you out of your happy space a little bit last night because we threw you into kind of a TV studio.
Yeah.
And you're used to small group networking, cocktails.
Elbow to elbow, yeah.
The elbow to elbow, really getting into the meat of things. And so I sort of apologize for that. But really, I thought the product ended up being, it's certainly, like I said, different from what you're used to, but very interesting. We certainly didn't move along at the pace that you normally do.
So we slowed
you down a little, but I thought the audience interaction, engagement coming from the other folks in the mm-hmm. audience that were there to help to present and do things as well was over the top. Mm-hmm. I really, really enjoyed. Everybody had ideas for the other thoughts, and after we sort of shut the lights off and the microphones and things. Mm-hmm. A lot of networking went on.
Further conversation ensued, yeah.
Doling out of business cards and ideas. And I even had notes I jotted down and went and talked to Brendan and folks after they presented as well. So really neat deal.
Yeah, and to give some like backstory to maybe some listeners, we did these years ago, dreamed up by who was talking at the very beginning, Clint, around get those ideas out. Like, tell them to me, because he hears them all the time. He founded the bakery. He's did marketing consulting. Now he does full outright business consulting, kind of full concept to operation in Alluvio. So he hears it all the time, and he has a ton of experience with it. But we created them at the bakery, and we'd do them once a week and just get around after hours and say, what's developing? What's new? What are you coming up with? All right. What's now in your back pocket? What did you put on the shelf or that you banged your head on and thought of the flux capacitor or whatever?
Yeah.
And it's just fun. When you get those idea people together, they just have fun with each other. You know, I'm not working on this, but man, this is brilliant. Obviously I'm not going to pursue it, but.
The thing that floored me the very first was when he told me the number of businesses that had launched mm-hmm. out of using this sort of concept.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, that was staggering.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything starts with that crazy or wild or harebrained idea. So the premise of it is just get people in the room that are like, all right, I've had this in my brain bouncing around and it's just going back and forth not too many times, or I've told my spouse, but you know, they're not too keen with it, you know, that I got other chores to do, so they don't want me to pursue anything else or my full-time job. But when they can divulge it to a group, then it changes, because then it's not in my head anymore. I'm actually getting it out. I'm getting it either to paper, and it, you know, we all know that, like when you tell it to maybe your secret other in confidence, but then when you have to go to your boss or someone executive or your whole team, you know, it's a whole different dynamic. We actually get it out in that type of space.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the goal of it, and I think we achieved that a little bit.
So different. Folks that had never launched a product or a concept or an idea or a service, mm-hmm. and then you had folks that it was almost like an AA meeting. I've had two
therapy,
failures.
Yeah.
I'm on my thing. I think I'm really passionate about this one niche idea. But and you got to help me. I got to get this out. And that was it was just brilliant.
Yeah, business consulting is never short on entrepreneur therapy. Yeah.
Okay. Is that what that's called?
There's a lot of action going on, and you know, it's very good to help those businesses.
I got that. Yeah. I really got that with the interaction last night about how, that's a great way to put it. Therapy is a great word.
The fun way to put it, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you came on today to for a little bit more encouragement. You had an idea for entrepreneurs that need to break that list down. I saw last night a woman that had this list of things that she needed to get through before she was going to start, and that was what sort of spurred the lemonade stand comment.
Yeah.
And you've got some ideas for folks to kind of nudge them out the door.
Oh, of course, yeah. What Clint said exactly right, and she was, and she knows she's doing it. She's thinking and thinking and thinking and thinking and stacking ideas on top of her other ideas, and it gets cloudy. And simply, it's like, go tell it to your customer. Go do it, go demonstrate, go act, go build, go create, go do that, because it's going to change. There's iterations every so often. He's, you know, a kid at the lemonade stand, just because the easiest metaphor or example is they know when to charge more, charge less, add more sugar or less sugar. You know, they do it just on reaction. You got to know what to react, because you can plan up the greatest plan in the world, but it doesn't work until it actually is understood and able to be received by your customer. So get it to your customer in a testing phase as fast as you can, because that's when you actually learn from it and can start to then, you know, do the actual construction of the business and whatnot.
Sure. Sure. So folks in the audience, I guess if you have a question you have for Thad or really anybody on the panel, now's the time. So you can shoot us a text. It's 956-STPB or 956-7372. Our phone number is 800-852-0214, and in the moment at sdpb.org, the email address might be the easiest way to get a hold of us. Just drop us an email and ask a question, and while we've got that on the line here, we'll try to get that answered for you. Next steps for what happened last night. I'm hoping we continue it. We may bring those folks back in a few months and have them tell their story again, and that'd be interesting to me. I'd like to see what happens with all of their ideas, and certainly an interesting use of the space last night, and you know, being downtown, and I think everybody kind of picked up on the vibe, and it was a good event,
good gathering. I think it was enjoyable, but next phase, I think, you know, there's a way to like grow it up where people. Now, you got it out to the group, either, you know, maybe not for the first time. We had some people actually in process of developing a business. Then we had some that's it completely just an ideation. So, but yeah, if we have like a grow-up phase where we get to check back with them in 3 months or whatever and see if they're going after it, pursuing it, chasing it, or if they, you know, decided to let it, you know, just be the idea, so... But yeah, it'd be definitely cool to see if things move to phase two or three and onward.
Until I started doing a little bit more research on this, the entrepreneurial side of business, I didn't realize how many other businesses are sort of in that space that are helping entrepreneurs with grants and business ideas and companies that'll help you with your business plan.
Mm-hmm.
And from the state level, There's certainly Sioux Falls level because you're in that space as well. Mm-hmm. So from the very standpoint of an idea, where do you really start? You've got all these resources. Is there a best place to start?
So our building is probably the one I will recommend. So I'm client specialist. I do membership services and some of the events program activity at the Zeal Center for Entrepreneurship. We're a nonprofit over by the Career Avenue in the northwest part of Sioux Falls by Southeast Tech Campus, New Tech High School.
Okay.
And within our building, we have 45,000 square foot of business incubation. We have co-working. We have us staff. So we have people operating, growing, you know, chasing the dream of the business. But then we also have the resources all under one roof. We have the Governor's Office of Economic Development, which is GOED. We have SBDC, Development Center. We have SBA, which is the Small Business Administration, Sioux Falls SCORE, SBIR, and kind of assortment of others.
That's an alphabet soup, but
it is the alphabet soup.
So you've rounded up all the key ingredients.
Somebody was smart back in 2004 and said, let's put these organizations under one roof.
Okay.
So it can be a mixing pot of all of them together because, you know, one business might get immaculate help from one and not the other, and a whole other business might get the opposite. So,
how many folks are out there being incubated at this time?
How many
can you handle?
We have 18 different incubation companies now, and they are very widespread. We have them listed in our tenant and community list on our website.
Okay.
RealZeal.com, R-E-A-L-Z-E-A-L.com. And yeah, they're from book publishers to a kids camp doing technology to a wellness initiative company, corporate wellness, to CRM software, custom built software company, database management company. What do we have? It's computer science, data science company, to a marketing company. So we have a widespread, which is a great thing to see when we have some diversification. So we have 18 of those, and we have an assortment of what we call memberships that we can have use of the space, our collaboration and co-working space, and our meeting rooms and conference rooms.
Okay. And is that, you obviously don't have unlimited space. Is there a rotation schedule? Do you give people a certain amount of time and say, hey, you got to get out of here?
They have five, it's in our bylaws, they have 5 years before they have to reach that graduation, get out of the nest phase.
That seems very generous.
Yeah, it's a good amount of time.
Some
go to that full 5-year length, which is terrific to see. Some decide this isn't a business worth pursuing long term, which is certainly all right too.
Right.
And then we have some that excel and accelerate faster, and they need to move out to their own full sustained kind of organizational either lease or building of their own.
That's interesting. The 5-year. Incubation period.
Mm-hmm.
I would have thought it would have been shorter, but I can really see how that makes sense.
It's a long game. Yeah, it's definitely a long game for a lot of what we do: economic development, workforce development. You'd wish the idea happens and you flourish overnight, but almost high majority, it takes years and years of build up, sacrifice, and continually boosting and growing to then.
That's again fascinating. It's certainly something I never realized. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a part of my metric to know. I appreciate you coming in and explaining that. The whole process was interesting. Like I said, my brain hurt at the end of the night.
It's fun, right?
But because you're constantly trying to think of ways to help people
That's one thing our community is greatly cultured at right now and set at is like we do have a good place where it's help and support, and you know, people will attach and provide whatever resource they can, even if it's those ideas to help to set up, you know, or just being that accountability person or maybe a mentor. We have actually really robust community, especially if you kind of get in our network and we can really plug you in and make those introductions for you. So yeah, it's a supportive environment. It can always be more supportive and inclusive, but yeah, it's a great environment to be a kind of launching small business owner.
So are you primarily Sioux Falls area, or do you, because our radio show reaches the entire state and beyond with the miracles of the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this a, strictly a Sioux Falls deal, or are there tentacles that go out to other communities, or how does that work?
We have served people all the way to Rapid City and some of the surrounding kind of our tri-state in southeastern South Dakota.
Okay.
But the good majority is our region that we serve in our, you know, nearest 200 miles, you know.
Regional, okay.
Yeah, so if that's Mitchell, Aberdeen, Chamberlain, or all the little suburbs around Sioux Falls. Yeah, we just want to serve whoever's doing, you know, great activity and launching something that serves the community or serves a certain niche of a customer base, so.
Okay. Well, Thad, again, thanks for so much for last night. That was great coming on the show today. RealZeal.com
is
the clearinghouse
for
the clearinghouse.
Information, there's an events page on there, too. We actually have a workshop next week called Lean Startup, which talks about how to get an idea out there and get it into testing phase and how you can, you know, it doesn't need to pivot this way, or do you need to add more fuel to fire? How do
is that the lean process?
Yes.
Okay. Not the being lean, you know, stripped down version of lean, but the lean process.
It's pretty much being nimble with ideas and knowing where you can test them at. Even if you're in a corporation, you know, everything's always changing, evolving, innovating, you know, being fluid and dynamic. But in a corporation, it's harder to kind of go against your norm and things you've now become well established. But some are doing it super well where they'd have a little outsight or, you know, subdivision where it's, we're trying something super new. It doesn't align with the things we're doing now, but it potentially can if we just put it out there and try.
So that's next week.
Next week on a Wednesday, 3 p.m.
Okay. Yeah. And then I noticed you liked a tweet this morning that was about a contest in Sioux Falls for ideas, entrepreneurial ideas.
Yeah, I just learned about that one. So, we're always learning about these things too, yeah.
Yeah, so very interesting. Again, thank you so much for last night.
Yep.
RealZeal.com for more information from Thad and the rest of the folks at Zeal. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kent. Appreciate
it. We'll be back after this break for the third half of Tech Radio. And welcome back to In the Moment Tech Radio. We're well into September now, just a week in, and I find that really interesting. Our only Tech Radio of the month. I believe we have some Festival of the Book.
Festival of the Book, yes.
Later this month, yeah. That will be preempting us, and you know, I'm just fine with that. That's a good reason to be preempted.
For sure.
I've been mad about other preemptions, but not this one.
No.
Absolutely not this one. Folks, we still have Jeff Litterick with us today from the Bureau in Peer, and of course, Joel Brovelite, our Mac guru, is here to answer questions. You can get a hold of us. The way is inthemoment@sdpb.org, the email address, or again, a text, 956-SDPB, that's 956-7372. We have a question. Ivor in Brookings, I had experience yesterday that demonstrated why I have a problem with putting everything in the cloud. There was a system-wide internet outage where I work. No access to websites I depend on, no email, no access to files in the cloud. And to put the icing on the cake, several cell towers were down. Thank goodness for our landline and that stuff called paper. This is Ivor, and I appreciate the comment. Jeff, what can folks do if they're cloud dependent and all of a sudden their connection to the cloud is ripped from them?
Well, it kind of depends on what you do and what your cloud provider is. And I actually know about that outage. It was a big fiber outage, and most people don't realize this, but cell towers run. Once you get to the tower, they run just like any other business for their internet connection. They have a line that goes to the tower, and if those lines get cut into a town, it tends to take out both the town and the towers in those towns, which means there's no networking access at all. Now, Google, for example, has an offline mode where you can cache certain documents, spreadsheets, these Google Docs locally so that if the internet does totally go away, you can still work on them, and then when the internet comes back, it will upload. Not all cloud providers and applications will have this feature, though. In that case, there's not much you can do. Go home, enjoy yourself for a little while with no internet access until the internet access comes back, or go someplace where there is internet access. In this case, it might have been quite a drive, but there are a few, and you might want to look for them. Those particularly, and the Google Offline works on both phones and computers for their Google Docs. It's kind of important to have that backup in those rare cases that you lose all internet access for an extended period of time. Think of it kind of as a power outage also. I mean, if the power goes out in town, there's not going to be much you can do until the power's back up. You're just going to have to kind of wait it out and make the best of it. The internet outages with all the cloud-based stuff and applications are becoming much more like that also.
Sure. Joel, is there a similar switch in iCloud? You know, it's more of a syncing thing, isn't it, with iCloud? You keep a copy local and you keep a copy in cloud?
Right, yes. Yeah, I mean, you can of course, use it as just storage, but ideally, Apple's cloud service just mirrors what you have, so you have availability on all your devices. It's pretty hands-off.
Sure.
But what I would say is outage on internet just happens so infrequently, especially the super rare event of the internet going down and cell towers going down, that I think that's just when you go get a coffee. Or, you know, if you're paying people, you got time to lean, you got time to clean. So, you know, that'll probably last all of an hour or so. So it's kind of a non-event just in general. I mean, it's never happened to me ever that I can think of. And I don't think I'm that unusual that I've just had internet for, been out of internet for more than 20 minutes, maybe an hour.
And those two things, the local copy and the cloud copy, are two of the three copies you need to have everything backed up.
Right.
I'm just channeling Amos a little bit.
That's right. That's right.
Your data's got to be in three places. One of them's offsite, and cloud counts as that.
It sure does.
So you just need one more, whatever that's going to be.
Your mom's house. Keep it at your mom's house.
Or on a thumb drive or a...
Yeah, at your mom's house.
Do people still burn DVDs of data?
I did the other day, actually.
Because that's archival, right?
Well, because it was fast. Yeah.
One of the big changes is people are not just storing data in the cloud. The applications are in the cloud.
Right, and that's what this guy was talking
about. No cloud access, no applications to access data, even if you do have it locally. So you do have to be aware of that kind of stuff and have plans for that kind of stuff, too.
Yeah, I mean, I use Adobe's Creative Cloud, and those applications, they require cloud access, but you have, you know, I wouldn't even say limited functionality when you have no internet access. You have pretty full functionality. Most big apps for businesses have some sort of, you know, contingency for, you know, not having network for a period of time. So,
right.
You know, especially if the application is, pretty main to your business, like an Adobe application or like Word, you're going to be able to
touch the web for licensing, and then
exactly.
If you use the web for storage,
whatever, for sure, exactly. Yeah. So you're probably going to be okay.
Yeah.
And one thing when you are looking at cloud providers and stuff, it's just not internet access problems. Microsoft, for two afternoons this week, had massive issues in their Azure cloud because of one data center. In fact, it started because one of the Dallas data center overheated as part of it, and the issues rippled through the entire Microsoft infrastructure. So if you're relying on Office 365 and stuff like that, you're going to lose you lost access, or you could save stuff up to the cloud. So it's best to keep some stuff local, both apps and data, just in those rare cases.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, what the problem was, and it's an overheated data center, huh? So Skype and Office 365 had this weird error that popped up about, you know, not being
Skype
able to access.
And, and almost everything that was cloud-based with Microsoft at one point or another. The root issue was part of a data center overheated, so they had to turn down some servers in one of their data centers. But they have data centers all over the world. But what happened was it was kind of a cascade effect across the entire infrastructure of Microsoft. And hopefully they are hard at work at fixing this, so this little doesn't happen. So they lost maybe 0.05% of their servers, but it affected every major Microsoft service to different people at different times. So it was kind of like one of those things, oops, we put too much hooks in, and that one little critical part put enough of a workload to other places that everything kind of fell over for a while. So it can happen. It can happen to any cloud provider. So like I said, it's always good. If you're going to be using applications, to make sure they can run locally without the back end needed for your critical functions.
Excellent. Okay. I was going to ask you about that, and I'm glad you mentioned that. Glad we had the question. Thanks, Ivor. Add another layer of depth to the talk today. Jeff, are you a uTorrent or a PikaTorrent or whatever you want to pronounce that? Do you do any BitTorrenting? You move around any big files on the web?
Oh, I've used it to move some big files, but I'm not a normal user because I don't really need to move that many big files all the time. So can't say I'm a real big user. I've, you know, installed it for one-offs kind of thing when mm-hmm. I had to, but
The reason I ask is I noticed that they came out of beta with their browser-based product. They have a tool that you don't need to download that client and install, and I think it's out there for pretty much all of the different flavors of internet browsers as a a plugin or an extension or whatever you want to call those extra layers of things that run on top of browsers. And the nice thing I thought was they hook in adware is built in to check to make sure that what you're downloading isn't funky. But same kind of functionality. It looks like you can watch or listen as you download in this browser version, and it's out of beta. So I thought maybe I'd mention that if there's any torrent users out there looking for, I guess, a clientless solution. They're out of beta for the web version. Cool. Well, Jeff, anything else you want to bring to the show today? Playing a certain game, or you got a security tip for us today?
I'll make a mention of this. If you've flown with British Airways, they had a massive compromise. Now, we're in South Dakota, but if you've flown internationally through British Airways, you probably want to pay attention to that. They've had a humongous compromise of their customer data, so be aware of that stuff. It's still happening. We haven't heard of too many recently, but or we haven't talked about too many, but there's been some really big ones here recently in terms of information being stolen and stuff, and always kind of be alert and be cognizant of that fact, so...
Okay, I had an interesting thing. My Wired subscription got me a YubiKey. Have you seen these? They plug into your USB port. I think Amos talked about it one day as a multi-factor authentication process, a little hardware key. That was kind of interesting.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen one in real life, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
You jam it in your USB slot, and if your software you're using recognizes YubiKey as one of the things, you press the button and it spits out this. You can't see what it's spitting out because it's all hidden underneath the dots. But there's I'm assuming like a hash or something that is generated on the fly that tells the software product that you are you.
Mm-hmm.
And it appears that all the majors, the Twitters, Facebooks, my password saver program that I use called LastPass uses or allows the use of that hardware key as a authentication method, which I thought was interesting. So my first, I guess, trial in using another piece of hardware, I've tried the Google. I've got the Google Authenticator app on my phone. That seems to work pretty good. I'm trying to wean myself off of getting the texts, with the code you have to put in. After our
two-factor authentication.
The second factor that texts you the number. Mm-hmm. Were you here for the show that we talked about the big?
I don't think so.
So there was a company that had a bunch of their engineers or one of their development teams or something got
Reddit.
Their cell phones cloned, and so they were able to get those text messages with the authentication codes. And apparently it's super easy to do. So Amos is worried about it, so I'm worried about it. and so these hardware things, that's a much better way to go, Jeff, right?
Yeah, the government itself, they have a National Institute of Standards that makes all these standards like weights and stuff, but they also come out with security standards. And they actually delisted SMS or texting as a valid method for multi-factor this past year, actually maybe a year and a half ago, because of its insecurity. So they do, in their security frameworks, they do not recommend texting. And the company was Reddit that got hacked that way.
Right.
A app on your phone is the best way to go.
Okay. Great. Joel, something for this week? Something you're working on? Or
Just an update from what we were talking about earlier. I did double-check the date. It is next week that they're going to announce probably the new iPhone on the 12th, which I believe is Tuesday. And it does look like maybe they are going to release a new Apple Watch at that point. So
is that fourth generation?
The fourth. That'd be the fourth generation.
Okay.
And rumor has it that there's going to be a slight redesign of the watch itself, so
different shape, or
I'm certain it won't be a different shape, and until I'm wrong, of course. But it just doesn't seem likely. I think probably you'll probably be looking at maybe a more edge-to-edge screen, probably thinner, maybe larger. Hard to tell. It's anywhere in there, but I don't think they'll change the shape. It's too iconic, really. You see somebody wearing that watch, you know it's an Apple Watch. I don't know that you could say that about any other watch, frankly. So I think they'll probably keep that. And it is possible they'll have another announcement, maybe a refresh of the iPad Pro, the large one, maybe a refresh of the MacBook Air. Certainly the Mac Mini is going long in the tooth, so that, you know, there might be the traditional, non-traditional one more thing at the end. But yeah, should see new phones, maybe with an even larger screen than they've ever done. So hard to tell.
I was just going to ask you about phone. So that's the Wednesday the 12th.
Wednesday, yeah.
Yeah, Wednesday the 12th. Is there are there any other features that are coming out? Better cameras, better...
Well, again,
Can they make better cameras?
It's all speculation. Boy, you know, talking about better cameras, I forget what company it was, but somebody's putting out a five camera or five lens camera, on a phone coming out here pretty soon. But we'll have to see. Right now, it's all rumor.
All right. Well, we will definitely follow up on those rumors at Future Tech Radios. That would be the first week in October. Join us again on the air here at SDPB. It's great hearing from you again, Joel. Appreciate you being on the show. And Jeff Litterick from the Bureau and Peer. Completely appreciate your thoughts and your expertise in all the areas that you bring to us. That music tells us that it's unfortunately all the time we have for today's show. Thanks again to our panelists, our booth producers, Steve Zwemke and Chris Loffrey in the booth back there. Thank you so much. And remind you, SDPB is always there for you with our app or at sdpb.org. Go there and click on Listen. Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay safe.